Welcome to the Eclipse Nation podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Merchant. I'm joined by Blake Harris, and we are here to talk the 2021 Los Angeles Clippers. That is going to take me a while to get used to saying those words put together, but Blake, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. We are now officially about a day and a few hours from tip-off, so it's going to be nice having Clippers basketball back on the TV. And just, you know, get the NBA season rolling. We talked about this in our last show where it doesn't feel like they should be playing now. But, you know, because we just saw them a few months ago. But I'm looking forward to having NBA basketball back on my TV.
Absolutely. So let's just recap quickly how the Clippers got to this point. They obviously play the Lakers tomorrow night. Or depending on when you're listening to this, they play the Lakers Tuesday night. Is it 7 or 7:30? I feel like I should have looked that up before I got here, but my bad. It is the second game on TNT. That's what you all need to know.
Right.
And of course, the Clippers are playing the Lakers because the NBA will stop at no opportunity to get the Clippers to play the Lakers, despite how many times it seems to happen on big NBA moments. Thankfully, it will not be happening on Christmas. So that's a nice thing. But anyway, so the Clippers lost the second round of playoffs. We don't need to rehash that. I do remember that we had this pre-write prepared for when Doc would tie Bill Fitch for 10th on the all-time coaching wins list. And we're just like, oh, yeah, this is like ready to go, and just never ended up using it. So I guess he'll get to do that with the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, no more pre-writes, because you said get the pre-write ready, and then they never played a regular season game again.
Yep.
And then you said, hey, Blake, the Clippers are up 3-1. Why don't you get a pre-write ready of what it means to you as a lifelong Clippers fan them advancing to the conference finals, and then we know what happens. So I've officially decided that no more in Clips Nation are we going to have any sort of pre-writes ready to go, because we're 0-2 so far, so never again.
I will tell you, I had no pre-write ready for the Luke Kennard extension because I did not see it coming. And that boy just cashed in on $64 million.
I'm not going to pre-write Kawhi Leonard re-signs with the Clippers for 5 years. So I'm not going to go anywhere near that.
I will tell you, actually, you know, my last stint at Clips Nation, I was the one who pre-wrote that the Clippers would sign Kawhi Leonard in the summer of 2019. So
you're going to pre-write.
I got one.
You're going to pre-write the Kawhi re-signs news. So perfect.
But yeah, anyway. So yeah, last season, Doc Rivers is out. Ty Lue is in with an almost entirely new set of assistant coaches. We've got Dan Craig from Miami, Kenny Atkinson from Brooklyn, Chauncey Billups from the broadcaster's booth, Larry Drew from Cleveland. It's a really nice group. You know, Dan Craig is just a defensive wizard. Those Miami teams always punched above their weight on that end of the floor. Kenny Atkinson is player development guru. The young guys are always hyping him up. So really nice staff that Ty Lue's brought in. And then, of course, on the court, Montrezl Harrell left. Landry Shamet was traded. That brought in Luke Kennard, who was just extended today for 4 years. So 5 years of Luke Kennard before even seeing him play 1 second on the court. The Clippers also said goodbye to JaMychal Green. Funny enough, you know, both of their their backup power forward centers went to Western Conference rivals, but they replaced him with the lovely Serge Ibaka, just a delight so far in his Clippers media availabilities. And they drafted Daniel Oturu and Jay Scrubb, neither of whom I expect to see any meaningful time this season, but they have been playing Terrence Mann and Fiondo Cabangeli quite a bit more, and that has been a lot of fun because I almost forgot, was on the Clippers last year, so it's been nice to see him back.
He was too busy setting records in the G League. That's what he was doing all year.
So the Clippers, you know, slightly different around the edges, but the core guys still there. You know, we still got Kawhi, PG, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams. Marcus Morris came back on a deal very similar to Luke Kennard's. So Clippers are shelling out the big bucks, and I think this is the team that we're going to have, not just for this year, but for the foreseeable future. And that brings me to my first question for you, Blake. How do you think the Clippers will be better this year than last?
Well, I think first and foremost, the most important thing is it looks like, well, I mean, of course, we talked about this on the last show where it's like, wow, it seems too good to be true that everyone's healthy. Like someone has to have something. And then literally, I think like a day later, the Marcus Morris news came out about his like sore knee. Mm-hmm. I think just the getting everyone healthy. I mean, Paul George talked about it. I think it was yesterday's press conferences about how him and Kawhi are both healthy for training camp, healthy for the preseason, anything that's going to be a huge benefit moving forward. So I think just for the most part, having everyone good to go, Marcus Morris, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a serious injury that's going to be, you know, keeping him out for a few weeks. They're kind of saying he's day-to-day questionable, kind of something like that. But having everyone healthy, I think is going to be the biggest part. Obviously, it's going to take, you know, some time getting used to everyone. Three preseason games, that's not enough to get kind of everyone gelling all together. But again, I think, yeah, the most important thing about this Clippers team is everyone starting the season healthy. I think for the most part, maybe we're going to have to figure out, you know, with Zoo, Ibaka, Kennard, like who's going to be getting starters minutes, who's going to be, you know, that closing lineup. They'll figure that out. But I think for the most part, everyone kind of has their identity. There's, I hope, not as much drama in the locker room. I think some of that drama is gone this offseason. So I think for the most part, less drama. Everyone's healthy. So I think those are two huge benefits for the Clippers to start the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think continuity is a really good point. And the fact that you brought up Marcus Morris actually reminds me that I didn't mention that the Clippers added Nick Batum this offseason, who apparently is going to be the team's starting forward, which is just a remarkable come up from, you know, being asked by the Charlotte Hornets to sit on the bench because they wanted to develop their young guys. And now he is starting at the four for a team that is contending for a championship. But yeah, I mean, even though Morris, obviously you don't want anybody to be hurt, but the fact that Kawhi and PG are able to practice and go through everything in training camp, I think is far more important than the other guys doing the same. So that's a good sign for the Clippers that they have this measure of continuity. And I think just, you know, last year, this team was sort of anointed, right? Like they brought in Kawhi, they brought in PG, they filled out their bench like really well. I mean, obviously they ended up changing the team over the course of the season. You know, that Mo Harkless addition turned into Marcus Morris and Reggie Jackson came into play, but from the very beginning, it seemed like everyone was picking the Clippers to win. And no matter what sort of stumbles they had over the course of the regular season, it was always just, oh, well, Kawhi knows what he's doing. He's done this before and he'll carry the rest of the group along with him. And obviously that didn't happen. But I like that the Clippers get to sort of occupy, now I wouldn't say an underdog role, because I think they're comfortably like in the top three of championship favorites this year. But by not being the de facto number one, I think it gives them a little bit of an edge. And I think that will be helpful for this particular group.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the way that, you know, their season ended, it was painful, but it just kind of like it instilled in everyone's minds that the Clippers just like weren't that good of a team for whatever reason, where it's like this team, I think they legitimately would have contended with the Lakers. I think that series would have gone seven. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, it's just a coin flip for who comes out on top. I think the Clippers, they would have beaten the Heat in six games. I think the Lakers series, that would have been the more difficult one. And then the Heat, I think they, especially going from the Lakers to the Heat, I think that would have been great for the Clippers. This is a team that could have won, you know, easily last year. And now all of a sudden, I think you upgrade by getting Ibaka and you lose Harrell. I think that's an upgrade. Luke Kennard, I think he's an upgrade over Shamet. I do hate losing Jermichael Green, but I think Nick Batum, we don't need Portland Nick Batum. We need just, if he comes in, does his job, is not the $30 million a year guy that Charlotte was expecting for him, he could be a good piece. And I do think that the expectations aren't as high on the Clippers this year because of just how the season ended last year. They're still, like you said, top three or four favorites in regards to winning a championship, but they're not like this. Like this is the team we expect to win. Last year, the Clippers were the team that was expected to win. This year, a few other teams have higher expectations, which I think actually is going to bode well for the Clippers, where they're still going to have a lot of eyes on them. They're still going to have a lot of pressure, but it's not going to be as much. And I think by taking that amount of pressure off, I think that could really benefit them. I think especially for guys like PG, Kawhi, you know, like everyone is expecting the best from them last year. Mm-hmm. They'll still be expecting it, but just not quite as much.
Yeah. A couple other things that I think the Clippers have improved upon from last year. One of them, I think Lou is just a better coach than Doc Rivers. Obviously they both have won one title in their NBA careers. They've also both lost in the finals. I think Doc once and Ty a couple times. But I mean, Ty was just so overmatched in those series. I don't think that was a indictment of his coaching whatsoever. I think, you know, those Warrior teams were just historically great. You know,
you could have put together an all-time coaching cast, and I don't think they could have taken down those Warriors teams.
Agreed. I just think that Ty Lue has proven to be more flexible over his coaching career and just more creative than Doc Rivers. And I feel very good about having him on the bench just in terms of his acumen and what he was able to do with those Cleveland teams under similarly high pressure situations. So I think that is an upgrade. And then I also think that we talked about how talented the Clippers were last year. And I do think that top to bottom, the 2019-20 team was more talented than this one, But I thought the problem with the way the Clippers roster was constructed last year was that the talent was spread out too much. Like, yeah, maybe they had 14 players who were better than 14 players on this roster, but you can't play 14 guys on the court at the same time.
Yeah.
And what I like about this year's squad better is that the talent is consolidated. So you have a top eight that makes more sense than what you had last year, where you weren't going to play 10 guys in the postseason. And it's like, well, sure, you know, Terrence Mann can come in for defensive reinforcements and Reggie Jackson's great as a shooter, but like, can we put those guys together into one person? You know, and I'm not sure that the Clippers did that on the backcourt, but they definitely did in the front court, where, you know, now you've got a guy who can shoot like Patrick Patterson, but also defend like Ivica Zubac, right? That's what Serge Ibaka is. He's all of that in one piece.
Right.
And then similarly with Nick Batum, he's a wing guy who I don't believe the Clippers had a wing who they really trusted beyond Kawhi and PG last year. I mean, they were using Amir Coffey for significant regular season minutes down the stretch before the hiatus. And, you know, bless Amir, it's really impressive that he came to that position, you know, starting the year on a two-way, but he wasn't ready for that and he didn't play in the postseason. So I just like that the Clippers have a playoff rotation that makes more sense. And I think we'll see the benefit of that down the line.
Yeah, you hit it perfectly where last year, I mean, that's the thing everyone was saying, the Clippers have like the deepest bench and that's great and all. I mean, you can have 20 guys just that are all fantastic, but it doesn't matter because you can only put five of them on the court at once. And it's a matter of how do they all, you know, mesh together. And as we saw in the playoffs, there were times when, you know, Doc would throw Reggie Jackson, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell out there at the same time. And that was something that even children should not be watching on television because that was so bad. And like you said, I mean, I mentioned this, you know, a few minutes ago. I thought overall they upgraded fairly well at everything. But like you said, you're taking like two guys that you can just mesh into one, like the Ibaka reference you did, that was spot on, you know, Batum, another one. So I think, yeah, like you said, they've added and they've constructed a more well-balanced, you know, eight, maybe nine player rotation that especially come postseason time, it's going to be a lot better. It's going to be a lot more clutch, I guess, than what they had back in the bubble. And like I said, it's weird to think about how, again, you think of just having a deep bench and how you just overall, I think that means so much. But like you said, when you put certain players together, like, again, they could be their like best at their each own position, but compared to what they do together, it could be really bad. Like we said, we saw it last year in the bubble where certain guys where they'd be great individually on the court at once, but when you add a few of them together, it's a recipe for disaster.
Right. And I think, you know, just having more two-way guys is helpful in the postseason. Yeah. And we saw that the Clippers, for all of their talents, didn't really have a ton of two-way guys. And the ones that they did, for some reason, were just glued to the bench in favor of others, which I don't think Ty Lue is going to do.
So. I would hope not. One can hope not.
But by the same token, you know, if we're going to talk about how the Clippers could be better from last year, I also think it's worth addressing how they could potentially be worse, you know, in certain respects. Is there anything that sticks out to you that, you know, ways the Clippers might have regressed since last year?
I don't think there's any ways, you know, that they've regressed at all. I just think the only way that they're going to be worse that I think is just if everything goes wrong in regards to health. Mm-hmm. I mean, they took a gamble today by signing Luke Kennard to a deal where if Luke Kennard's healthy, he's worth that money. The problem is, as we've seen, he's a guy that's really injury prone. Nicholas Batum, I mean, I've said this, I think, in the last podcast about how he could be a clutch signing. But if he's anything like what he was last year in Charlotte, I feel like he's quickly going to find himself losing minutes as the weeks go on because he was bad. I don't think he'd get any worse, but he could get bad. And then, you know, Marcus Morris with this lingering issue going on, we'll have to see how that looks. And, you know, you got guys like Lou Will, Pat Beverly. I mean, Pat Bev has some injury history in the past. Lou Will, he is kind of getting up there in age. So I think for the most part, overall, I don't think they got worse talent-wise. My big concern is just things, you know, and even Kawhi, PG, they have kind of some injury history as well. So as long as everyone's able to stay healthy, I don't see there being any real problem. But there are some guys that, you know, they do have a past and that could be a little worrisome. But again, I don't think that's going to happen. That's just my one worry in regards to the whole team.
Yeah, I think your worry kind of, you know, dovetails really nicely with mine because my only thing with the Clippers, the only way I think they might be a little bit worse than last year is just in terms of regular season record. And that's exactly because of what you said, because I don't think their depth is quite as good as it was last year. And again, you know, in the playoffs, I'm not sure that that's particularly important, but during the regular season, you got a guy like Montrezl Harrell who just brings it every single night and is so, he's really just a pain in the ass for opposing second units to go up against because he comes hard every single possession. And I think, you know, that Lou Zubac pick and roll in the second unit is going to be great. I think that Ibaka is going to have a nice chemistry, you know, with the starters in terms of spacing the floor for Kawhi and PG to do their thing. But I just don't know that the Clippers have the same, like dogs, I guess, who are just going to like be on every single night.
Right.
And on the one hand, you know, I think it's important that they built their roster this way. Like, it obviously makes more sense. It'll pay off down the line, and they're taking the regular season more seriously than they did last year, you know, and part of that is just because they all came into training camp healthy, relatively speaking. So I do think that there's going to be like an urgency to treat these games as if they matter right away. And I'm not sure, like, the preseason was the best indicator of that because they were trying things out. Like, I wouldn't say that the Clippers weren't playing hard in any of the situations, but they obviously like weren't running like the actions that we're going to see during the regular season, you know? It's kind of like a, I don't know, an oxymoron here, but like, I think that the Clippers are going to take the regular season seriously. I just don't know that they have the bodies to give that full effort every single night. You know, like a Montrezl Harrell did, like even a Jermichael Green did, who was just remarkably consistent. So I think the regular season record might suffer a little bit. Fortunately, I don't think that any Western Conference team is close enough talent-wise to really make that matter. And who knows what the playoffs are going to look like, because whether home court is going to matter or not down the stretch. But that's the only thing where I think this team might take a slight setback is just standings-wise.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, for the most part, not that they, again, like they didn't care last year, but I don't think they were too concerned with making sure they finished with the best record, finished with the top seed. They just kind of want everyone to get healthy. And we kind of talked about that, where it just seemed like there were a lot of games where they weren't playing at 100%. Now, I'm sure this year, maybe they'll have a little more incentive to just, again, to avoid any conflict in the potential postseason. But yeah, I don't see, for the most part, especially in the West, the Clippers, there's no way they finish like lower than fourth, I guess, even if they kind of just go half pace. They'll be just fine. Like you said, how much of an advantage is home court really going to mean? I'm sure it's going to be more impactful this year than it was, at least in the bubble, where I'm sure once we get to the postseason in May, June, my guess is there's going to be fans of some capacity in these arenas. Mm-hmm. But even then, the Clippers are a good enough team where, if for whatever reason, they don't have home court advantage, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference. So I think they'll be fine in that aspect.
Right. And I think it'll just take some time, you know, to get used to Ty Lue's system as well. Like, he's obviously trying to do different things than Doc Rivers did. So that learning curve might just, I just don't be surprised if the Clippers get off to a slow start, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And don't be disappointed, because I'm sure that better days are very soon ahead.
It's ironic, because every year I've always been saying like, oh, there's too many NBA preseason games. There's no need for this many preseason games. And this year I'm like, yeah, geez, only three. I wish they could have had like five or six or seven preseason games just to get it all sorted out. Because yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if the Clippers, kind of like, you know, that LeBron Heat team from, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, whenever that was, they got off to that kind of like 500 or so start. I wouldn't be shocked if the Clippers start out like, you know, 6-6, 7-8, and all of a sudden everyone's starting to like freak out and that's the headline every morning. I wouldn't be shocked. Ultimately, they're going to figure things out, but you can't just, you know, new coaching staff, a lot of new players, you can't just all of a sudden make it all click, make it all work, and just win a bunch of games. And I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I feel like the Clippers' first like few weeks of the schedule were fairly difficult. Like, they're playing some pretty good teams right away. So yeah, I'm not going to get too worried or read too much into it if, again, they start the first few weeks 500.
Yeah, like, just to start, you know, they start with the Lakers, which is a tough game. They play in Denver on Christmas, another tough game. And then their home opener, so to speak, because opening night is a road game. Their home opener is against Dallas, which is another really tough team. So it's not going to be easy, you know, for the Clippers in the beginning, but I think it'll be very helpful for them to figure out what they have going.
Right.
All right. Next question. Who do you see as the Clippers' X factor this year? That one that'll determine whether they're reaching their goals or not.
I'm just going to go with two. I'm going to go with either Luke Kennard or Marcus Morris. Just because I think, you know, Paul George, Kawhi, they're each going to get their 20, their 25 points or so. We know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. I just think the Clippers, they need to have that consistent third score, that consistent third option, where, but if we can get bubble Marcus Morris for the season, then I think the Clippers are going to be just fine. I know when he was with the Clippers for the first month or so, whenever that was, he was struggling. I think he was shooting like 29-30% from three. He just wasn't the player he was with the Knicks. And then in the bubble, he just turned things on like crazy. So if they can get that, they'll be chilling. Then Luke Kennard, as we've seen when he's healthy, he's, you know, kind of a guaranteed 15 points a game, 2 to 3 threes a game. So I think just having that third scorer where you can go to, where if, let's say PG or Kawhi, they're out for some time with an injury, they're in foul trouble, it's not rolling. Cause we've seen Lou Will, he can heat up at any moment, but Lou Will can also go 2 of 14 with ease. So having that, you know, reliable scoring option, I think will be huge for the Clippers. So yeah, I'm going to go with, again, not one or the other, just kind of both, where if one of them could just turn into that, you know, guaranteed 14 to 16 points a night, that no matter what, you can get it. I'll go with that for my X factor.
So I really want to say Paul George. I just feel like he's too good to be an X factor, but right, I do think easy. That Paul George, you know, the difference between all-star Paul George versus first team all NBA, you know, like MVP candidate Paul George, that's the gap, you know, the Clippers have to be mindful of, because he is being paid like MVP first team all NBA Paul George. And last year he was great, but he was more all-star Paul George, which is, again, an excellent player, but not what the Clippers need from their second best guy. But if we're really going to stick with X factor, I think it's got to be Ibaka. You know, the Clippers, we talked about this just like ad nauseum, so I don't want to bring it up again, but like the biggest difference I think on this team is switching out Montrezl Harrell for Serge Ibaka. And if he can legitimately be a defensive center who also does not, you know, gum up the floor on offense, like that's it. That's, you know, game over. That's the game changer. So nice. If he is still like the same athletic capability that he had in Toronto, obviously like the Clippers gave him the starting spot. I wonder if that was a function of him, you know, signing for the mid-level exception, potentially able to get more money elsewhere. They were like, okay, you can come and be our starting five. Ty has said that it has to do with more. He likes the chemistry between Kawhi and Serge in the starting lineup, and then you get Lou and Zoo off the bench who have played together longer. I think there's other forces at work here, which is fine. You know, if you need to get a guy to come, you get a guy to come. But I think his ability to just, you know, be the center really in any type of situation the Clippers encounter in the playoffs is super important. So he would be my X factor there. Last thing, we're going to make some predictions. Where do you think the Clippers will finish standings-wise in the Western Conference?
I think I was going back and forth on this, where I want to say second, just because, again, it's, I think the Lakers are better. Clippers are going to finish second. But again, for some reason, not that they're going to be in cruise control, not that they're just going to not care, but I just have that feeling again where there's going to be times they rest some guys. Maybe there's an injury for a week or two out, figuring things out. I think that, again, like the first few weeks of the season, that might kind of set them back, where they might just be in full, like, we need to win every night. We're in 100% mode from the get-go, but that the opening few weeks might kind of set them back just a tad. So I'm going to go with third, just because I there might be at this point in the West, who even knows? Like, I would not be shocked if, you know, Dallas comes in, they get the second seed. Denver, I wouldn't be shocked with them. Portland, I wouldn't be shocked with them. Houston, I mean, they're an absolute mess. But Houston, if they make some miraculous move where they bring someone in, they keep Harden, I wouldn't be shocked if they just go on some run. But I think third is kind of a safe bet, just because there's going to be some other teams, again, like maybe like Dallas, where they're thinking we need to get the second seed. Denver, Portland, they might think we need to be getting the second seed. So I think third is a safe bet, but I think second is realistic. But I think first, again, just because it's a hard start to the season, no real reason to try to get the top seed. So third is my guess. Second is my realistic hope.
Well, I'm glad you said third, because I'm on record as having picked second in our SB Nation NBA preview. funny fact about that. No Western Conference fan side picked their team to finish first. Well, there you go. I was the only one to pick second. So the Clippers apparently are the best team in the Western Conference.
There you go.
And if you haven't read that, it's on Clips Nation homepage, or you can just go to SBNation.com and find all of our lovely thoughts about the NBA season. But yeah, I don't think that any team in the West is meaningfully better than the Clippers. Most of them, I think, are significantly worse. I just think that the Lakers are going to have more regular season depth, which is going to matter during this season.
Right.
And I mean, I like of all the teams you mentioned, I think are worthy candidates to take the second seed. I'm going to add one more. I think I would not be surprised if Phoenix ended up in that spot, just because Chris Paul is a freaking maniac and they're obviously have a lot of incentive to get, you know, on the same page quickly, because that is a relatively new team that has been put together.
And the Phoenix bubble, that was a team that was
unbeatable.
Yeah, they were an unbeatable team. And yeah, I Phoenix, they've just been like the last few years, especially because I was going to like, you know, 15 Suns game a year because they were like $5 for students out in Arizona. I was like, this team is literally like in 2 or 3 years, assuming they could just develop everyone and maybe get like some sort of decent point guard. I think it'd be Chris Paul, but I'm like, Phoenix is going to be a problem in a few years. And like you said, I mean, I think Phoenix, it's funny that you say that, because Phoenix is like, I think the only team where I wouldn't be shocked if they were to finish anywhere from like 2 to 8. Whereas all these other kind of teams like Dallas, I can't see them finishing like lower than like 5th. Like Denver, they're probably going to be around that. Phoenix, I wouldn't be shocked if they're 2nd. I wouldn't be shocked if they're the 8th seed. Like they could literally be anywhere in that spectrum. It's a matter of how does it all mesh? How does Chris Paul look with them? But yeah, Phoenix, they're going to be kind of scary next year, to say the least.
All right. And then do you want to make any predictions about the Clippers playoff record? We can leave that untouched if you want. I have no problem.
Well, no, I'll just say they're going to make the playoffs. I think they'll be in the Western Conference Finals. I think that last year what happened, again, they were this close 3 separate times. They were that close. It shouldn't be a problem getting there. Like you said, for the most part, I overall think this is a better team than last year. I know a lot of people kind of think the Clippers may have got worse. Assuming everything goes according to plan in regards, like I said, Kennard, you know, Ibaka, Batum, assuming everything goes according to plan, I think this is a better Clippers team. It should be a Clippers-Lakers Western Conference Finals matchup. And at that point, I'll save my prediction until the playoffs begin as who's going to take that, because I have no clue at this point. But they're due. I kept saying this about the Dodgers, where I was like, this is going to be the year because they're due. The Clippers, with everything that's happened the last decade, with everything that's happened the past year, if they can't make the Western Conference Finals this year, there is some curse that's been placed upon them, because I've been saying for years, Doc Rivers, I think, is the common factor with why they couldn't get past the second round. So if they can't get past the second round without Doc Rivers, then there's something up. But I will say, at least right now, playoff prediction, it has to be Western Conference Finals. Like, I just think it has to be.
Yeah, I hate to just be in total agreement, but that's as far as I was willing to go too. It's just an LA Conference Finals. I think, you know, we deserve it. I mean, I began this podcast by lamenting how many times the NBA puts the Lakers and Clippers together, but I got no problem with it happening in the playoffs. Absolutely no problem.
Like, I want that to become like an actual rivalry. I know like Clippers fans claim like the Lakers are their rival. I know Lakers fans, I think, don't even claim it whatsoever, but it's like, I want a good, like, that's why I'm also so upset. Even if the Clippers would have lost last year in 6 or 7 games, at least that would have kind of been like the stepping stone to a really good rivalry, where if, you know, that would have been a hard fought series, Lakers win in 6 or 7, then all of a sudden this year, if they were to meet again in the conference finals, it'd be an even better matchup. Like, then I'm sure at this point there'll be some bad blood. So hopefully we can just get that, because I think a Clippers Lakers rivalry, since both these teams have never been like the best at any point ever since they've both been in Los Angeles, I think we desperately need that. I think it'd be fantastic for basketball. And so I'm hoping we can get that, because again, we were kind of screwed on that this past year. No offense to Denver, but LA Denver just isn't the same as LA.
I will agree. I think Laker fans would agree that LA Denver was not the same as LA for them as well. But yeah, the rivalry thing is always so interesting to me, because, you know, we had this rivalry week at SB Nation back during the hiatus portion of the offseason. And I sort of said that I think of the Rockets as the Clippers' primary rival. And that was met with a lot of derision from Rockets fans who do not consider the Clippers in that category. But I just don't think the Clippers really have a rival. It's sort of like fluctuated. Like, there was a little bit of Memphis time.
I was going to say, like, it was the Grizzlies for like the early 2010s. And then
there was like some animosity towards the Warriors.
And the Rockets. Yeah, and then it's just like, they don't, I wouldn't know. If someone said who's the Clippers' biggest rival, I'd be like, I don't know.
And unfortunately now, like, the Rockets thing is kind of not as fun anymore, because Westbrook is gone. So you don't get that Westbrook Beverly thing. And then Austin is gone and Doc is gone. So you don't get the Rivers family thing. So some of the pieces that were the most fun for me are no longer.
And then Chris Paul was a Rocket, and there was that whole, the tunnel incident. That was peak rivalry there.
Yeah, so I guess my wish for this season is that the Clippers, by hook or by crook, actually take the first steps towards developing a meaningful rival, whether that's the Lakers, you know, via a conference finals matchup, or somebody else, you know, maybe they play Dallas or Denver again in the playoffs and that heats up, because those series were already pretty loaded, you know, last year. But yeah, that's my wish, because I think being a fan is just so much more fun when you have a team that you can also just root against all the time.
Right.
But anyway, those are our thoughts for the 2020-21 Clippers season. Blake, is there anything you wanted to add about what you hope to see from this year? Or
I'm just hoping that, you know, they're able to get through this season smoothly. I hope it's able to work. I think it will. It's just going to be interesting to see, you know, how things play out. But yeah, again, I'm just excited to see regular NBA. I mean, the fact they pulled off the bubble was fantastic, but just even watching those games, it didn't feel like, you know, kind of like real NBA games for the most part. They did a good job, but it did kind of lose that feel. It still doesn't have the full complete feel, but at least seeing them back in their own arenas, back, you know, like in big stadiums, I think that's really good. So just hopefully get through the season, hopefully stay healthy, hopefully convince Kawhi that being a Clipper is the smart thing to do. They'll pay you a lot of money. Living in LA is fantastic. Everyone loves you, Kawhi. Hopefully they can convince him. But overall, like I said, just everyone stays healthy. We get through the season. And just, you know, just seeing basketball again makes things a little better than everything is now.
I think that is a perfect note to end on. So thank you so much, Blake, for talking about this Clipper season. Make sure to follow all of our coverage at clipsnation.com. And we will talk to you soon.